Second coming of the Messiah means coming of a follower of the Holy Prophet. The second objection leveled against us is that, contrary to the accepted Muslim belief, we hold that a follower of the Holy Prophet has appeared amongst us as the promised Messiah. To hold this belief, we are told, is contrary to the traditions of the Holy Prophet, as, according to these traditions, the Messiah is Jesus, son of Mary, due to return from heaven when the time comes. Now, it is quite true that we regard the founder of the Ahmadiyya movement, Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad of Qadian, Gurdaspur, Punjab, India, as the promised Messiah and Mahdi. And why not? The Holy Quran, the traditions, and ordinary common sense declare that the first Messiah died in the normal way. So, our belief that the promised Messiah was to come from among the followers of the Holy Prophet cannot be against the Holy Quran and the traditions. The Holy Quran declares that Jesus is dead. The traditions say the same thing. If, therefore, the traditions promise the advent of a messenger described as the son of Mary, this promised one can only be a follower of the Holy Prophet, not the Messiah of Nazareth who died in the normal way. It is said that even if the Quran and the traditions declare the death of Jesus, son of Mary, we should continue to expect the second coming of the self-same son of Mary. For is not God all-powerful? Can he not resuscitate the dead Messiah and send him back to the world? If we did not cherish such a hope and such a thought, we should be denying the power of God. But our position is very different. We do not deny the power of God. We believe that God is all-powerful. Because God is all-powerful, he has no need to resuscitate the Messiah of Nazareth. He can raise a teacher from among the followers of the Holy Prophet, install him as the promised Messiah, and charge him with the duty of reforming the world. We fail to see how anyone who deliberates over this subject in a proper manner can insist that the power of God requires God to bring the first Messiah back to life. Such a thing is against all ordinary canons. It is everyday experience that a person who can afford to have a new one hates to have an old coat turned for longer use. If he needs a new coat, he throws away the old one and gets a new one. It is the man who cannot afford one who wants the old coat turned or altered to be used again. It is the poor man who takes excessive care of his things. God is not poor. He is powerful. If he finds that his servants need someone to guide them, he does not have to put life into a dead prophet. He is able to raise one from amongst his living servants to reform and lead the rest. From Adam down to the Holy Prophet, not once did God have to restore a dead prophet to life for the purpose of guiding his men. Such a course is quite unnecessary. It might have been necessary if the purification and reformation of a given people at a given time had been beyond the power of God. If the dominion of God did not extend to all men at all times. God is all-powerful and his dominion extends to all men at all times. It is senseless to think that for the guidance of a given people at a given time, he should have to restore one of the dead prophets to life. God's power is boundless. He was able to raise a prophet like the Holy Prophet on whom be peace from among the Arabs. It is not beyond his power to raise one in our time similar to Jesus or greater than him from among Muslims. The fact is, therefore, that we deny the physical second coming of the first Messiah because God, according to us, is all-powerful and can raise anyone to the status of a guide and prophet at any time and from among any people. They are in error who think that God cannot do this, that instead of raising one from amongst us, he has to bring back to life a dead prophet. They have not esteemed the power of Allah as Allah deserves. The second coming of the first Messiah, therefore, is derogatory to the power and wisdom of God. It is also disparaging to the spiritual power of the Holy Prophet. To say that the second coming of the first Messiah is inevitable is to say something very strange. At all times in the past, whenever a people went astray and needed divine guidance, it was one from amongst themselves whom God raised for the purpose. Was this time-honored divine practice to be dropped when followers of the Holy Prophet went astray and needed divine guidance? Was the Ummah to be reformed by one of the earlier prophets, the prophet's own followers failing to provide a reformer from among themselves? This means that Muslims would have to follow the Jews and Christians, whoever cavil at the spiritual competence of our Holy Prophet. It is strange that Muslims should distrust the regenerative power of the Holy Prophet. If we think that a follower of the Holy Prophet cannot guide his other followers, the Ummah, in time of need, we support those who underrate the spiritual influence of the Holy Prophet. One lighted torch can light many other torches. It is a dead torch which will not do this. If followers of the Holy Prophet were to become so very corrupt that no one from amongst them would then be able to reform the rest, it must be admitted that at that time, the spiritual grace and productiveness of the Holy Prophet's teaching and example would have come to an end. This consequence cannot be accepted by any true Muslim. Every true Muslim knows that the followers of Moses needed to be rejuvenated from time to time, and the rejuvenation was brought about by teachers raised from amongst themselves. It was a follower of Moses who reformed the followers of Moses. The dispensation of Moses lasted for as long as God wanted. At last, when the time came for the dispensation to end, God turned away from Moses' followers and turned to the progeny of Ishmael to raise a prophet for the guidance of mankind. If now a prophet belonging to the dispensation of Moses should come to guide the followers of the Holy Prophet, it would mean that God has decided, God forbid, to terminate the dispensation of the Holy Prophet as he terminated the dispensation of Moses, and that in place of this, he is going to initiate a new dispensation. It would mean that, God forbid again, the spiritual power of the Holy Prophet is no longer effective, that it fails to inspire even a single follower to receive from the Holy Prophet's teaching and example the illumination necessary for the reformation and guidance of his followers. Alas! People show intolerance of the slightest offense to conceptions of their own greatness. They cannot accept the imputation of any defect or shortcoming to themselves. Yet, they do not hesitate to attribute defects and weaknesses to the Holy Prophet while claiming to love the Holy Prophet. What use is the love which is loud in professions but finds no echo in the heart? What use are professions unsupported by proper performance? If Muslims really did love the Holy Prophet, they would not tolerate the second coming of an Israelite prophet for the rejuvenation of the followers of the Holy Prophet. Who would turn to a neighbor for needs which he can fulfill in his own house? who would turn to another for help when he can help himself? Mullahs who think and teach that the Holy Prophet's followers would need the second coming of the Messiah of Nazareth at the time of sorest need have such an excessive idea of their own dignity that in religious debates, they would rather lose the argument than accept help from any other. If there is an offer of help, they do not feel grateful. They are hurt and say, "Are we so lacking in learning that others dare offer us help?" But when it comes to the Holy Prophet, how casual they are. They are quick to believe and teach that when the Prophet's followers need to reform, the reformation will come not from amongst the followers, not from the Prophet's own spiritual influence, but from the good offices of a Prophet from an earlier dispensation, owing nothing to the Holy Prophet or his teachings. Have men become so utterly dead and dull? Have they lost all capacity to think or feel? Do they value dignity and self-respect for themselves, but not for God and the Prophet? May anger and annoyance be shown to personal enemies, but not to those who offend God and his Prophet? We are asked why we deny the second coming of an Israelite prophet. But what can we do? We cannot change our hearts. We cannot show our love for the Holy Prophet except in ways which are normal and natural. The honor of the Holy Prophet is dearest to us. We cannot accept that for the reformation of his followers, the Holy Prophet should need the help of another and become indebted to him. We cannot believe for a minute that when on the day of judgment, mankind, from the firstborn to the last, will assemble before God and the deeds and achievements of all will be cited, the Holy Prophet would stand burdened by the debt he owed to the Israelite Messiah. The angels making the citation would declare in the hearing and presence of all humankind that when the Holy Prophet's followers became corrupt, the Prophet's own spiritual example failed to restore them to spiritual strength, and the Israelite Messiah, out of compassion for the Holy Prophet, decided to return to the world to reform the Prophet's followers and rid them of spiritual stagnation. We cannot contemplate such a thought. We would rather have our tongues torn out than attribute such a humiliating proposition to the Holy Prophet. We would rather lose our hands than commit to writing such a thing about the Holy Prophet. The Holy Prophet is God's beloved. His spiritual power can never lapse. He is the seal of the prophets. His spiritual grace and munificence can never end. He has no need to be indebted to anyone else. It is other prophets who are indebted to him. There is not a prophet whose truth the Holy Prophet has not proclaimed to those who denied him. It is the Holy Prophet whose teaching has converted millions of human beings to a belief in prophets they had not heard of before. There are about 80 million Muslims in India. A few among them have come from outside. The others belonged to this very land and they had not heard of any prophet. But since they came to believe in the Holy Prophet Muhammad, they began to believe in Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and others, on all of whom be peace. If they had not become Muslims, they would have continued to disown these prophets, even to remain hostile to them. They would have continued to regard them as pretenders, as indeed Hindus in India continue to do to this day. The same is true of Afghanistan, China, and Iran. The inhabitants of these countries did not know, so they did not acknowledge Moses or Jesus as prophets. The Holy Prophet's message and teaching spread to these countries, and the people of these countries came to believe in the Holy Prophet and whatever he taught. they began to acknowledge other prophets and revere them as true prophets. The Holy Prophet, therefore, has put all earlier prophets in his debt. Their truth was unknown. The Holy Prophet revealed it. The Holy Prophet is in nobody's debt. The grace and beneficence of his teachings must continue forever. For the reform and resuscitation of his own followers, he does not need the assistance of another prophet. Whenever such a need arises, God will raise one of his own followers to lead and guide his other followers. Such a one will owe everything to the Holy Prophet. He will have learnt everything from him. Whatever he is able to do by way of reform and reconstruction will be credited to the Holy Prophet. What one owes to any one teacher, one really owes to the teacher's teacher. A follower cannot be separated from his leader, even as a pupil cannot be separated from his teacher. The follower who leads other followers will owe a debt to the Holy Prophet. In short, the coming of a former prophet for the purpose of reforming the followers of the Holy Prophet is an insult to the Holy Prophet. Such an event would injure the greatness of the Holy Prophet. It would also contradict the teaching of the Holy Quran, which says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُغَيِّرُ مَا بِقَوْمٍ حَتَّى يُغَيِّرُ مَا بِأَنفُسِهِمْ. God never withdraws the reward from a people except when the people themselves become undeserving of it. In view of this teaching of the Quran, we have to admit either that the Holy Prophet, God forbid, has become undeserving of God's promise, or that God himself has gone back on that promise. With all others, God's practice has been not to withdraw a reward once made. But with the Holy Prophet, his way is different. To entertain such a thought amounts to unbelief. It amounts to the denial of God. It amounts either to a denial of God or a denial of his prophet. Because of this grave consequence, we shun such beliefs. We believe that the Messiah whose coming was foretold by the Holy Prophet is to arise from amongst the Holy Prophet's followers. It is for God to award this status to whomsoever he likes.